This episode is brought to you by Shopify. You hear that? That's the sound of another sale with Shopify, your go-to for selling everywhere, online, in-store, and even on social media. Shopify POS is like the central hub for your retail operation. From payments to inventory, it's all there. Got different gadgets? No worries. Shopify's hardware is adaptable, fitting in just how you do business. Start transforming your retail business with an incredible offer. A trial for just $1 per month at shopify.com/Wondery, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/Wondery. Take the leap and upgrade your point of sale solution with Shopify. Visit shopify.com/Wondery and start your trial today.
The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Don't waste time on apps that don't work. Babbel's conversation-based teaching prepares you for real-life situations, and studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/truecrime. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/truecrime, spelled BABBEL.com/truecrime. Rules and restrictions may apply.
A few years ago, after quarantine ended, I found myself in Flagstaff, Arizona, creeping into the empty Spanish-style lobby of the Hotel Monte Vista. I was terrified, but not because it was supposedly the most haunted hotel in the West, with a wailing baby spirit in the basement, ghostly flappers who grope guests at night, and a mad pig-slaughtering butcher who haunted room 220. What had me panicking? Well, I'd just come face-to-face with the person who invited me there. On a grand marble stairway stood the hotel's owner, a striking bohemian woman. Her name was Charlotte Monroe. But back in high school, I called her Lottie. Lottie used to be the love of my life. Unrequited, that is. A wild child who loved comics and slasher movies just like me. She was the one, but I was too chicken to ever make a move. By the end of school, Lottie made hers. She said, "Blow off college, Rodney. Let's buy a junky old car and get the hell out of Maryland." She wanted to hit the road, find the most haunted places, face the scariest ghosts, and laugh in their faces. I nearly said yes until my grandma let me have it. She called Lottie a dishonest flake, a flirt who'd abandon me for another man, or worse, get me killed. I disagreed, but I was afraid to give up college and my carefully planned future. I asked Lottie to wait, but that girl barreled through life like a freight train. She was sad I wasn't coming, but she was still going. The only time we ever kissed was the night she kissed me goodbye. I never heard from her again. And the one became the one that got away. Here we are, almost 40 years later. There was so much to say, but honestly, I just wanted to hug her. I was gathering the courage to do that when a strange wind blew through the lobby. The chandeliers flickered. In the corner, a rocking chair swayed. Too quickly. Somewhere in the distance, I heard the echo of eerie laughter. I gulped. This place really is haunted, isn't it? Lottie nodded gravely. Yeah, Rodney. And that's why I need your help. You're listening to Run Fool. I'm Rodney Barnes, and this is episode 26, Hotel Monte Vista, Part 1. The wind died down, and Lottie beckoned me to the chair that rocked on its own. She snapped her fingers, and it stopped. I asked, "Was that a ghost?" Lottie smiled. "No, more like an echo. Now sit." I did as I was told. Lottie bent behind a desk, then came back with a bottle of bourbon. She slid it across the ground to me. I remember the night in high school when we split a six-pack of wine coolers. I felt like a shy kid all over again as I took a swig. I asked, "How did she get here?" She smirked. "Your fault. You fill my head with all those horror stories. No wonder I ended up in one. Not right after school, though. When I went on my road trip, the only monsters I met were awful boyfriends." I bristled. Even as a grown man, I guess I still hadn't fully moved on from her. Lottie leaned in. "But a few years later, I came here with a guy and had the scariest night of my life." It was the summer of 1992 and a storm battered Flagstaff. A brand new red Miata pulled up to the curb by the Hotel Monte Vista. Lottie hopped out of the passenger side. The warm rain soaked her, but she didn't mind. It was refreshing. Her sort of boyfriend Sam got out too. He did not look refreshed. Sam was a banker. Lottie had met him when her car broke down in Atlanta. He was cute, but uptight. So Lottie was shocked when he agreed to a cross-country road trip with her. He wasn't the most fun, but hey, he drove a cool car and paid for stuff. Sam stared up at the three-story hotel's flickering red sign. "Why do you want to stay here?" Lottie hauled their bags out of the trunk, then kissed him. "You'll see." Lottie and Sam walked through the double doors into a shadowy lobby. Ornate chandeliers hung from the ceiling, but most of the bulbs were dim. A staircase led up to a second floor, but water dripped down onto it from a leak in the skylight. A rocking chair creaked back and forth. Then they saw movement. A bellboy walking down a hallway. Sam snapped his fingers and yelled, "Hey!" The bellboy froze, then turned. As he approached, Lottie wondered how his steps made no sound on the floor. He stepped into the light and her heart ached when she saw how nervous the gaunt kid was. He reminded her of her old friend, Rodney. High school Rodney, mind you, not present-day cool guy Rodney, just so we're clear. The bellboy was 20 at most. His slick back hair and boxy red jacket studded with brass buttons made him look like he'd stepped out of the past. He grinned.
"Good hard work deserves a nice tip, ma'am."
Sam scoffed and said he'd carry the bags himself. Lottie slapped his arm. When they looked back, the bellboy was gone. A weary voice rasped,
"Checking in."
They whirled around. A withered man sat in the rocking chair. When they walked to the check-in desk, he got up and handed them a sheet with room prices. "Take your pick. You're the only ones here tonight, more or less." Sam glowered. "How did a three-star dump get away with these rates?" The man pointed to a sign on the wall. "Most haunted hotel in the West." Sam went pale. Lottie's thing for the supernatural freaked him out, which is why she hadn't told him she was taking them to a haunted hotel. She was tricky like that. Lottie eyed the old man's name tag curious. "So, Crothers, what kind of ghosts you got? We talking poltergeists, ectoplasms, or ectomists? They're all translucent, or can some actually grab you?" Crothers winked. "Book a room and see for yourself, Missy." Lottie looked at Sam, who gritted his teeth. "Can we please have your least haunted room?" Crothers let out a wheezy chuckle. "Ain't no such thing here." Room 220 hadn't been renovated in decades. When Sam and Lottie walked in, they noticed a faint odor, which Sam said smelled like a pigsty. Another odd thing was the fact that the TV was on, playing an old black and white movie. Sam stomped over to turn the TV off. He went to the bed to unzip his bag when the TV turned itself back on. Sam whipped his head around. "Did you do that?" Lottie's eyes twinkled. "Nope. Spooky, huh?" Sam said it was bad wiring, then pulled the TV cord out of the wall. The screen went dead, but Lottie kept staring, waiting for it to turn back on. That happened in horror movies, but not here. Lottie sighed, then went to help Sam unpack. Lottie had just turned out the lights to go to sleep when the noise started next door. Music. Old-timey jazz from a crackling record player. Then she heard voices. Two women, chattering and giggling in manic tones. Strange since Crothers had said she and Sam were the only guests. Well, he did say, more or less. She wanted to nudge Sam, but he had his sleep mask on and his earplugs in. Lottie crept to the wall, wondering, was this a haunting? She put her ear to the faded wallpaper to listen, when someone bellowed, "Shut the hell up!" Lottie turned. The yell came from Sam, half asleep but furious. He slammed his head back on his pillow, and the noise stopped. Lottie went back to bed, disappointed. A few hours later, Lottie stirred in her sleep and felt a drip of water on her cheek. She heard the rain outside and thought, great, there's a leak. She opened her mouth to sigh, and another drop fell right into her mouth. A metallic tang assaulted her tongue, and she realized it wasn't water. It was blood. She looked up. It took a second for her brain to process the snout, the beady black eyes, the slick red flesh. Then she understood what she was seeing. A skinned, bloody pig carcass hung from the chandelier over the bed. This was too scary, even for Lottie. She scrambled up, yelling for Sam. He ripped his mask off in annoyance, then saw the pig and screamed even louder than her. She told him they had to get out, but Sam grabbed his keys and ran to the closet, determined to get his expensive luggage. He reached for the door when a wild-eyed man burst out of the closet, wearing a bloody white coat and wielding a butcher's knife. He raced at Sam, ready to hack into his shoulder, but Lottie dragged Sam out of the room. As soon as they ran into the hall, the next room's door opened and two women peered out. Lottie was about to warn her noisy neighbors about the butcher until she got a look at them. There were twins dressed like 1920s flappers, but shards of bloody glass jutted out of their pretty faces. They burst into shrieking laughter. Sam bolted away. Lottie followed. They rounded a corner in the hall and skidded to a stop. The bellboy was there. Sam yelled that a maniac had broken in. The kid smiled and said what he'd said before.
Good hard work deserves a nice tip, ma'am.
Enraged, Sam lunged to punch him and fell through the bellboy. Despite the horror she'd just faced, Lottie felt a strange thrill. There was a ghost bellboy in front of her, phasing in and out of reality. But the next time he went translucent, Lottie's thrill turned to alarm. Through his fading body, she saw the elevator. The doors were closing, and Sam was inside.
If you're like me and can still recognize Mr. Brightside from the first note, and then can't resist screaming it at the top of your lungs, you're a millennial. And if you're a millennial, it's time to add Clarins Multi-Active Cream to your daily routine. Rooted in nature and innovated with science, Clarins has a long legacy of creating industry-first, plant-forward products. Using a skin charger complex made of 2% niacinamide and sea holly bioextract, Clarins Multi-Active Cream has been clinically proven to target the first visible signs of aging by smoothing lines and wrinkles, refining pores, evening tone and texture, and strengthening the skin's moisture barrier. While Multi-Active Cream can't bring back the golden age of boy bands, it can de-stress your skin. Clarins Multi-Active Cream is available online now. Go to clarins.com/truecrime and get Multi-Active Day and Night Cream for 10% off, a free welcome gift, plus free shipping on your first order. That's clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME. clarins.com/truecrime with promo code TRUECRIME.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A minute later, Lottie ran down the stairs into the lobby. The front doors were open. Just beyond them, she saw Sam on the curb, hopping in his car and driving away. Lottie's jaw dropped. Sam was no prince, but she didn't know he was a monster. She ran, ready to chase him down, when ice-cold fingers grabbed her. Lottie turned, terrified that it was the butcher, but it was Crothers. Thought you could sneak out without paying your bill, huh? It was so absurd that she laughed. Of course she was leaving. Sam abandoned her and a pig ghost bled into her mouth. Crothers spat. Don't complain because you got what you wanted, missy. And don't think you can stiff me. I'll send the cops after you. Lottie shoved him until he toppled. She ran for the doors, but they slammed shut. She heard locks snapping shut from every door in the building. She was quite certain she was locked inside the Hotel Monte Vista. The lights began to flicker. Then, Lottie heard voices echoing, women laughing, a pig squealing, a baby crying, even the bellboy asking for a tip. The sounds invaded her head, making her dizzy and frantic. She slammed her hands over her ears. What do you want from me? The voices stopped. Then Lottie heard squeaking. She turned to the doors and her eyes went wide. A word formed in the condensation on the glass, scrawled by an invisible finger. The word was... help. Lottie looked at the door, bewildered. Then she heard a pitiful yelp. It was Crothers, cowering on the carpet.
Don't leave me alone, please. You got them all riled up and I don't know what they'll do.
The lights pulsed like strobes. Now shapes descended the stairs, phasing in and out of existence. The butcher with his knife, the bellboy, the flapper twins with bloody faces. Then a couple, arm in arm, each with a gunshot wound in their head. And a priest holding a screaming baby in a yellowing nightgown. They converged on Crothers. Hoping they were distracted, Lottie decided to try to break through the doors. But when she faced the door, she heard squeaking again. A new word was scrawled into the glass. Now, the message read, help him. Lottie looked back at Crothers. All the hotel's ghosts stared at her, expectant. Then the lights flickered one last time, and they vanished. Crothers burst into tears and Lottie sighed. She did not want to help him, but she was pretty sure the hotel wouldn't let her go until she did. Lottie eased Crothers into the rocking chair. He nursed a bottle of bourbon and told her his story. He'd inherited the hotel from his estranged dad 40 years ago. It was deep in disrepair and infested with supernatural vermin. Some, like the bellboy, were harmless, but others, like the flapper twins, were mischievous at best and murderous at worst. He didn't know much about any of them, since public records about the hotel had a strange habit of vanishing from City Hall. Crothers tried to get the Monte Vista condemned, but the city council claimed it was a historic monument. He knew the truth, though. They were too scared to knock it down. He had no choice but to rebrand it as a haunted hotel, hoping for brave, or foolish, adventurers to stop in for a night. It was his only way to make a living, and he couldn't bear passing the burden of running the place to anyone else. Lottie asked, had you tried an exorcism? Crothers chuckled. Years ago, I brought in a priest to get rid of the ghosts. Ended up adding one, because they scared him to death. Lottie shook her head, remembering the ghostly priest she'd seen earlier. Then she jumped as Crothers grabbed her hand. But I think you can help. His eyes lit up as he told her. When she checked in, she was brave, unlike the spineless boyfriend. Curious and enthused, asking about poltergeists and ectoplasm, solid ghosts and spectral ones. Clearly, she knew her hauntings. Lottie stammered, that's stuff I picked up from movies. Just because I've seen Ghostbusters doesn't mean I am one. But then, she paced and got to thinking. Yeah, she'd only seen horror movies, but she'd seen a lot of them. She thought of her old friend Rodney again. God, he'd flip if he knew what she'd gotten herself into. The thought made her smile, so she leaned down to squeeze Crothers' shoulder. I guess I could give it a try. The next morning, Crothers dusted a light in the second floor hall. He sighed, grateful for silence. When fingers jabbed his shoulder, he shrieked and saw that Lottie stood behind him. Unfinished business. Ghosts haunt places because they have regrets or something they wanted to do before they died. So we have to get to know them. figure out how to help. If we solve their unfinished business, then they'll cross over. Crothers scoffed. You gonna chat up the butcher in 220? Have group therapy with him and his dead pig? Lottie laughed, nervous. I'd rather start with a friendlier ghost. Got any Caspers around? Crothers looked over her shoulder. How about him? Lottie whirled around. Now was her turn to shriek. The bellboy stood behind her. She composed herself, trying to sound sweet. Flirty, even. Hi, handsome. I'm Lottie. I was wondering, is there any unfinished business I can help you with? He chirped his catchphrase.
Good hard work deserves a nice tip, ma'am.
Lottie squinted. Could it be that easy? She dug in her pockets, scrounging up a few quarters. Here, thank you for your hard work. She tossed the coins, expecting the bellboy to catch them. To grin, elated by the tip he'd sought for decades. To gleam with holy light and cross over to whatever came next. But the coins flew through his spectral body and clattered on the floor. He floated away. Lottie followed, insisting that she wanted to help. She just needed to know his story. He stopped, looking distressed, then rushed at her. No, into her. Lottie's vision blurred. Then she saw sights and sounds from the bellboy's life.
Deserves a nice tip.
She heard him say his line about tips to two women, who laughed cruelly. She saw the street outside the hotel. She tasted smoke from a hand-rolled cigarette. She heard glass shatter and two wet thuds. She saw her hand, well, the bellboy's hand, writing the date on a letter. Then she felt a noose tighten around her neck. Lottie screamed and found herself in the hallway facing the bellboy. She burst into tears, reeling from the knowledge that he'd taken his own life. He shook his head, apologetic, then sped off. Lottie ran after him, but when she passed room 222, the door burst open. The Flapper twins flew out, screaming like banshees. Lottie was blown back, like a hurricane had whirled through the hall. The girls vanished. Lottie pulled herself up, blood trickling from a cut on her forehead. She nodded with grim certainty. Not every spirit at the Monte Vista wanted her help. And given the laugh she'd heard in her vision, she was sure the Flappers had something to do with the bellboy's death. That afternoon, Crothers guided Lottie to the basement. That's where the employee files were, and Lottie was dead set on finding out who the bellboy was. She asked, "What about the Flapper twins? Did Crothers know anything about them?" He nodded, reluctant. It was before his time, but their death was a scandal people had talked about for years. Their names were Millie and Delilah. In the 30s, they were ladies of the night. Some John slapped them around real bad, so they stole all his cash and came to the hotel to hide out. But this guy was some bad news. Somehow he slipped past the desk, went up to the girl's room, and tossed them both out the second-story window. Lottie shuddered. No wonder the twins were unhinged. Then she remembered the crashes and thuds from her vision. Had the bellboy seen them die? Did that scare him enough to take his own life? They reached the basement door. Lottie asked Crothers if he was coming. He shook his head and walked back upstairs. You're on your own, missy. Too scary for me. Oh, and if you hear a baby crying, just pretend you didn't. That ain't milk he's hungry for. The mildewy basement was a mess of creaking pipes, skittering spiders, and Lottie's legs were soaked by a foot of dank water on the ground. She headed for an old filing cabinet. The drawers were rusted shut, but she managed to pry one open and flip through the moldy folders. When she'd seen into the bellboy's past, she saw him writing a letter. She noticed the date he'd scrawled on the top, 1932. If she could find that year's roster, she'd find out who he was. It took some digging, but she found the 1932 staff list. There were two bellboys listed, along with the ID info. One was born in 1880, too old. But the other, Teddy, was born in 1913. That made him 19 in 1932, which felt right. Lottie smiled. Hello, Teddy. Lottie heard a splash behind her and a baby's soft cooing. She tensed up, but decided not to turn around. She didn't want to see what was behind her. She went back to Teddy's file and saw an envelope. It had "confidential" scrawled across it, but Lottie ripped it open. She pulled out a letter, the one she'd seen Teddy writing in her vision, his suicide note. Careful not to damage the yellowed paper, she began to read, her heart filling with pain.
Dear world, I cannot go on breathing after what has occurred.
Before she could finish, a gust of wind blew the note out of her hand. She turned. A chill ran down her spine as she saw the note dance in the air, like someone was waving it around. Then she heard giggles and knew who she was dealing with. She barked. Delilah, Millie, no more parlor tricks. If you're here, show yourselves. The air shimmered. Then the flapper twins appeared. Each held one side of the letter. They smiled, the glass shards in their cheeks cracking as the skin stretched and bled. It was gross, but Lottie didn't have time to be scared. She told them to give back the letter. She was trying to find out why Teddy died so she could help him solve his unfinished business. Once she did, she'd help the rest of them. In unison, the twins whispered.
He doesn't deserve help.
Lottie yelled that everyone deserved help. The girls shook their heads, then tossed the letter into the foul water. Lottie dove to save it, but it disintegrated in her hands. She cried out in anger, getting ready to stand, when a spectral force pushed her down. Delilah whispered in one of her ears, and Millie whispered in the other.
Bad, nobody's helping you.
They shoved her face into the water. Lottie choked on sewage, rasping and flailing. She felt her limbs get weak and her vision grow dim. She knew, soon, she'd be just another ghost, trapped in the Hotel Monte Vista. I stared at Lottie. And what happened? She sighed sadly. Suddenly, my stomach dropped. I realized I'd been with her in the lobby for hours, from sunset into nighttime, but I'd never once touched her. I stood up, my hands trembling. Lottie, did you die? Lottie looked into my eyes, then burst out laughing. Of course not. It was a tough scrape to get out of, but she promised she wasn't a ghost. I had to see for myself, so I ran up to put my arms around her. And just to make really sure, I kissed her too. When we parted, I said, tell me, how'd you help the bellboy? Lottie put a finger on my lips. I'll tell you part two tomorrow. Ghosts have unfinished business, but we do too. Later that night, I lay with Lottie in bed in the suite she called home, feeling younger than I had in years. I told her I couldn't wait to hear the rest of the tale of how she took over the hotel. She smiled, sleepy. It is a good one, isn't it? I said, hell yes. Lottie scooched closer, put a hand on my chest, and asked a question that made my stomach drop again. How much could we sell it for? I blinked. What does she mean? She sat up. Come on, you're this big shot horror writer, making up scary stories when I've actually lived them. So I'll sell you the rights to my story, and you can write it. When the movie comes out, we'll split the profits. I stammered, explaining that it wasn't that easy to make a movie. Lottie shrugged. Fine, make it a podcast. People eat those up. I pulled on my pants, my head spinning. Lottie, I thought you were in danger, that you needed my help. Lottie insisted. I do, Rodney. When the pandemic hit, we shut down. And when things opened up, nobody came back. Everyone spent a year terrified in their own homes, and they sure as hell weren't looking to be terrified at a 3-star dump in Flagstaff. But if you help tell my story, baby, they'll come flocking back. I staggered to the door. My teenage heart broke all over again as I told Lottie, my grandma was right about you. I stormed down the hall, headed for the staircase to the lobby. I had to get out, to wipe this whole damn day from my mind. I felt used and disgusted at myself for falling for Lottie again. Hell, she'd probably made up her story. I stopped at the top of the marble staircase because the lights started to flicker. Then, I saw them. Figures at the foot of the stairs. A priest, a couple, and more. I looked down the hall to my left, wondering if I could escape. But I heard pig squeals and the swing of a knife echoing in the darkness. I looked at the hall to my right, and saw a baby in a bloody gown crawling out of the shadows. The ghost of Hotel Monte Vista had me surrounded, so all I could do was back up. Then, I felt cold hands slip around my shoulders. It was Lottie. She caressed my cheek, her eyes brimming with tears. I wanted a horror rider to save my hotel. But Rodney, you know what's even better? I shook my head, terrified of what she'd say next. Lottie smiled. A horror rider to haunt my hotel. Then she shoved me down the stairs. Want to hear what happens next? You'll have to wait for the next episode of Run Fool! Run Fool is a production of Ballin Studios, Campside Media, and Atwell Media. It is hosted and executive produced by me, Rodney Barnes. This episode was written by Amin Osman and produced by Abakar Adan and Lee Mengistu. Editing by Abakar Adan. Sound director, designer, and mixer is Kevin Seaman. Creature vocalization by Terry Cashburn and Colette Anderson. And artwork by Jessica Clarkston Kiner. Production support by Jeremy Bone and Cole LaCasio. Special thanks to our operations team, Doug Slaywin, Ashley Warren, Sabina Mara, and Destiny Dick. Executive producers at Ballin Studios are Mr. Ballin, Nick Witters, and Zach Levitt. Executive producers at Will Media are Will Malnati and Rosie Guerin. Executive producers at Campside Media are Matt Scher, Josh Dean, Vanessa Gregoriadis, and Adam Hall. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.